This is the Dental Experience Podcast. Here's your host, Ryan Vett.
Welcome to another episode of the Dental Experience Podcast. I have with me today a very special guest, and today's a special day for me. And I just want to put it out there right at the beginning that officially starting today, I am raising money on WeFunder for a new startup called Boon. And WeFunder is a crowdfunding platform. Crowdfunding has a lot of stigmas, and investing in the private market versus the public market, there's just a lot of questions about that, and new laws have made it more readily accessible to more people. So I have an expert with me today, Chris Lustrino, who is the founder and CEO of King's Crowd, a site that can help you know where to put your money wisely in the private market. So Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You bet. And I am really passionate about this. For most of my career, I've been in the startup world, whether raising money from angels or VCs. And obviously on the side, if you're in it long enough, you also have to become an angel investor. So I've done angel investing and in the market as well. And this is something passionate to me because so many people have so many misconceptions about fundraising as a whole and what it's like to invest. And dentists as a whole, and dental professionals are higher paid than many industries. I have an article coming out in Dental Economics in just a couple months that talks about how dentists are one of the higher paid professions across the board. So all dental employees, and yet their most typical investing, you know where it is, Chris?
Where's that?
In mutual funds, which is great. It's safe. It's stable. But I was just reading an article in TechCrunch that just came out about Menlo Ventures. When they invested in Uber, they got 93 times return in just a couple years on their investment. And that's one of the beauties of investing in a private company. That said, you can lose all that money too. So Chris, I just want to spend the next couple minutes hearing from you. And let's first talk about private investing and what that's like and what the opportunities are there.
Sure, absolutely. So I think something that, you know, a lot of people don't realize is that 97% of all investable assets are actually private. And look, that includes everything from houses to commercial real estate to loans and mortgages, right? All of these things, but it also includes startups, middle market companies, any company that's not listed on something like Dow Jones or NASDAQ. And what we've seen over the past, you know, 15, 20 years, we used to have 8,000 public companies on, you know, on marketplaces like Dow Jones and NASDAQ. There's now about 4,000. It's been cut in half. So companies more and more are staying private longer. Reason being is that capital, access to capital in the private markets is more and more accessible as we've had these massive venture capital and private equity funds be created out of pension funds and things like that. And so a lot of the growth opportunities of companies actually occurs before they ever go public. I mean, just think about the fact that a few weeks ago, Uber went public at I don't know if it was $40, $50, $60 billion, some massive amount. And it's like, well, guess what? The person who invested when that was worth $3 million saw a ton of growth. The person who gets in at $50, $60 billion, they get a 10X, but maybe needs to get to, you know, $500 billion, which is crazy, right? So what was created was the Jobs Act in 2012, which said, look, we recognize that, you know, to date, we've always said that non-accredited investors, aka non-millionaires, and many dentists may already be millionaires anyway, but for non-millionaires, access to the private markets was essentially closed off. It was illegal. And the Jobs Act said, perhaps we should change that. We should provide access to everyone. And so what we now have is marketplaces like WeFunder and 45 others that are FINRA registered, that have regulations around them to ensure, you know, that things are compliant. But end of the day, investors of all types from, you know, if you make $10,000 a year or if you make $10 million a year, can now invest in private companies online and partake in the growth stage of companies, which used to be inaccessible.
Yeah. And I want to just talk about that in the Jobs Act, because a lot of people, I think they aren't aware of private investing because of the pre-Jobs Act era, where literally, and you said it well, it was illegal if you weren't a millionaire or an accredited investor. And I want to caveat that because many dentists and many people listening, they probably have a high net worth, but that includes their home. So once you take that out, you might be ineligible as an accredited investor. So really, you're talking about a very, very small portion of people who could have invested in the Ubers of the world, the Lyfts, the Airbnbs, the Facebooks, all of these companies before they went public. That just was such a limiting factor. Now the Jobs Act has totally made it available to just about anyone. Could you talk about who can invest?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you mentioned, non-accredited and accredited investors. So non-accredited, like I mentioned before, you can make as little as, you know, $10,000 a year and still be able to invest in these companies. And now when people hear that, they think, well, wait a minute. You know, if people are making really little amounts of money, one, are they sophisticated enough to know how to invest? And two, you know, how could they have any money to put in these deals? And I recognize that that's a valid point. At the same time, one, I don't think that your level of wealth has anything to do with your sophistication or ability to think about how to invest in these companies. So I think that's a total myth. And it's something that I've seen time and again, frankly, from our own user base. I mean, I have people who reach out and, you know, they make 50, 60K on a yearly basis, but they're only 2-3 years out of school, which is, you know, kind of a general starting salary, right? But they also work in some sort of investment position in their day-to-day job, and they're studying and doing due diligence on companies all day. So they're absolutely capable of doing this. And I think it all comes down to, you know, invest in things that you know and understand and care about. And that's the cool thing about this is you can partake in those companies when they're early on. If you're a customer of and you see real value, perhaps it's a company you should be a part of. But better yet, because the minimums are set so low on these companies, literally on platforms like Republic, they could go as low as $10 minimums to invest in these companies. I would say the average is around $100. So you can partake in investing in 10, 15, 20 companies and still only have spent about, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 that year investing in startups. And so we always say, if you're going to invest in this market, you know, invest across a large swath of companies. The worst mistake you can make is only invest in one or two companies. You're bound to lose your money in at least one of them. The reality is startup investing is really risky, but you can de-risk that by investing in lots of deals. And we typically say if you get around 20, that's a great place to be. So if you decide, hey, I only have $5,000 a year to invest in startups because I only want 5 or 10% of my total portfolio to be in this asset class, that's great. Then put 500 into 10 or put 250 into 20. Don't put, you know, 5,000 into one. And so that's the caveat. But end of the day, because the minimums are so low and because there's access on all these platforms, anyone can partake at the level that makes sense for them.
That's great. And I want to go back to one thing you talked about, and that's investing in something you know. I feel like right now a big trend, and you can probably speak to this better since you monitor all these sites, but a big trend that I have seen is all of these craft breweries, craft distilleries, small wineries, all popping up and raising money. Now, I own two coffee shops and wine bars, serve coffee, beer, wine, and whiskey. So I know that space, and that's something that I'm comfortable investing in. Plus, it's kind of a fun thing to invest in. But I think understanding your industry and not just investing, if you don't know about robotics, I mean, robotics are cool. And if you want to study them and get into them, that's great. But if you don't know about that, start with something you do know. Would you say that's fair, Chris?
I think it's a great first step. Yeah. And I think over time, you know, one of the things that we try and do is help people invest in this market into things that maybe they don't fully understand, because we go through a traditional venture capital, you know, private equity due diligence process on all the companies that we look at. So we try and help you maneuver things that you might not know about as well. But to your point, start with things that you understand. And over time, if you want to get a little bit more sophisticated, utilize resources, talk to people that can help you kind of invest in things that perhaps you don't understand as well. So you don't end up, you know, in a bad deal where you just didn't understand the terms of what was going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to come back to due diligence in just a moment, because due diligence, if you've raised money, makes you cringe. If you've never invested, you're probably scratching your head, what is due diligence? And so I do want to come back to that. But before we get there, can we talk about equity crowdfunding on some of these platforms versus Kickstarter? Because Kickstarter was all the rage and you could invest in your local coffee shop or whatever it might be, which is great, but that's just more of a donation than an investment. So could you talk and kind of debunk some of the myths surrounding platforms like WeFunder versus a platform like Kickstarter?
Absolutely. So the whole point of the Jobs Act and the whole point of creating FINRA registered platforms like WeFunder is the idea that you can own equity in the company, just like a venture capitalist, just like a private equity shop, and actually own that company. So if they do end up IPOing, if they do have an acquisition down the road, you own that piece of the company, then now when it's sold, you're going to get some sort of liquidity and some sort of gain from holding a piece of that company and investing in them early on. It's just like owning a share of Uber when it's public, except when it was private. And so it's the same exact thing, with Kickstarter Indiegogo, it's truly just a donation. You know you're not getting your money back. You might be getting early access to a product. You might get a t-shirt, and that's great. That's a lot of fun, but there's no actual monetary value or thing that you're holding on to. With this, you're getting real equity in the company, and with that comes a downside. So when you put that money in, don't think, oh, you know, hopefully it 100x's and I have $10,000 or whatever. It could also be that you end up with zero and you don't even get the t-shirt or anything else, because end of the day, you share in the upside or the downside since you now own equity in that.
Absolutely. And you mentioned it, it's very much like owning stock in a public company. I mean, it is an asset that you own part of that company. I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, at end of the day, as I mentioned, it is equity in the company. It's a common share. It's a safe. It's a convertible note. These are the securities that people utilize in the venture capital world. And so, you know, WeFunder, for instance, I think their SAFE a lot of times is actually very similar to what's used at Y Combinator, one of the most well-known, you know, incubators, accelerators, whatever you want to call it, out in Silicon Valley that have had companies like, you know, Airbnb and Lyft, et cetera. So you're doing the exact same thing as a venture capitalist, just on a much smaller amount. And just think about it, right? End of the day, the reason why these platforms can make sense and exist today is because now it's accessible to reach lots and lots of people with small dollar amounts because of the internet, right? Back in the day, the reason that Goldman Sachs went and became an investment bank for the ultra wealthy was because if you're going to have to talk to 100 people in person, you might as well get 100 people who have $10 million plus rather than, you know, 10,000 right. people who have $100 plus, right? So it's the same idea in the venture capital world. It's like, look, if I'm going to go have a conversation with an investor, I want one that's going to put in $1 million because I don't want to have to meet with tons and tons of investors. But if I could put it online and I could host a webinar and I could do all of these different things online and connect with hundreds of thousands of people, but in one setting, well, guess what? Now it's become efficient to do the exact same thing and give them access to the same securities that these big VC shops are getting access to.
That's great. And I think one of the reasons why we chose to put Boon on a crowdfunding platform, equity crowdfunding, against, as you and I were talking earlier, Chris, some VC said, don't do it. People that I've worked with in the past are like, you know, this is a terrible idea. You don't want to go that route. Complicates this, that, and the other for future investors and other VCs. And VCs, by the way, I don't know if we define that as venture capitalists or venture capital, but the other VCs are like, go for it. It's awesome. But the reason we wanted to put Boon on a platform like this was because we believe that we're going to positively impact dentistry. We believe that we're going to positively impact healthcare and medical and veterinarian and all these different healthcare industries to help provide better patient care. And in doing that, we wanted to give people access to invest in that before we went to raise some institutional money. And we wanted people that are in the industry to be able to rally around to support this and get a piece of the pie and have actual equity in the company. So that's why we chose to do it. We wanted to make it fair, and we didn't want to limit it to the most wealthy of the wealthy, as has been done in the past. I think it's just an incredible opportunity to reach more people and give more people opportunities that previously they might not have had.
I think that's exactly right. And we've seen the exact same thing. We've actually raised, you know, almost a couple $100,000 via this mechanism for our own business. And what we've seen is, you know, I've had friends and family put in $100 checks. I've had billion-dollar company founders throw in $10,000 and $15,000 checks. I've had everything in between there, mm-hmm. right? And so it's given us an opportunity to have amazing investors come on board. I mean, some of my advisors have come out of the people who partook in our equity crowdfunding round. Some of our, you know, people have helped us with marketing, some of our service providers, all things because they care about the business now, right? They own a piece of it. So anything they can do to help grow the business Yep. is actually really valuable for them. We've gotten, you know, tens of paying customers out of this. It's like, it's free marketing. There's so much more you get out of it than frankly just going to a venture capitalist. And a lot of times they say, well, you know, VC, it's smart money. There's a lot of VC shops out there these days, and very few of them are in fact that smart money that I think a lot of people think of. Hmm. And so in fact, getting more people involved and people who could actually be your customers and build loyalty to what you're doing, I actually think is way more valuable.
Yeah. And we took that same approach, not just with fundraising that we're launching today. Boon is a gig economy. It's dental temps, veterinarian techs, nurses on demand with the click of a button. You can see them arriving just like a DoorDash delivery to your practice that day. You can get them in as little as an hour. You can schedule them in advance. In building a gig economy platform, I decided to do something really different. So I went onto Upwork, which is a gig economy,
sure.
and I freelanced for a while to understand what does a freelancer feel? What are the pain points and how can we do this better and differently? And then we built the entire V1 of Boon, and a lot of our team members were all hired via Upwork, which is, again, the gig economy, because we wanted to build a gig economy platform on the gig economy and then allow people who will use the app, who will be able to pour into it, like you said, Chris, allow them to invest. So we're trying to really make this something different. And our slogan is practicing good. It's this idea that so many people practice medicine, but we want to practice good in everything we do by providing high quality patient care and all of that. So very much like you just said, that's our goal. We want to build this community around this idea where we can really impact positive patient care, reduce practitioner burnout, help people who have flexible schedules. So if they have to leave to pick up a kid from school, someone can pick up where they left off. If someone needs flexibility because they're a parent and want to stay home a couple of days, they can do that and work when they want. So we're really trying to empower individuals through everything that we do. And, you know, that's just another reason we chose to go on WeFunder.
I know. I think that's terrific and is completely aligned with what I hear from a lot of founders. There are many, look, we were just talking to a founder the other day who raised, you know, tens of millions of dollars from VCs in Silicon Valley. He sold his company for tens of millions of dollars to Uber, you know, had great success and decided to go this way because he saw the pitfalls of going the VC route. And he saw an opportunity to engage a broader user base and do something really special and unique. And I think we're starting to see a lot of founders like that think that way, which is, you know, this is about more than just capital. There's a lot more there. I mean, just imagine had Uber and Lyft, right, 5-6 years ago when they were just getting started, were able to say to every one of their drivers and every one of their riders, hey, you can own a piece of us and create that stickiness.
Right.
I mean, that is such a powerful and valuable thing to be able to do. And I think we'll just continue to see more and more of that, just like you guys with Boon.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Chris. Well, we've talked a lot about due diligence throughout this conversation, and that's really important as an investor, especially in a private company. I've been through due diligence many times with both acquisition due diligence on both sides of the table, as well as VC due diligence. And it is a laborious process, but it is extremely important. So do you mind talking a little bit about due diligence from your perspective, and then we can kind of tie in how King's Crowd actually helps with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think something that there's many studies out there that you can look at, but basically, you know, if you're spending less than 10, 20 hours on due diligence, your odds of having positive returns over the long term go down drastically. End of the day, understanding things like what the market opportunity is. Are these the right founders for the job? You know, can they actually execute on their vision that they have? Does the business model make sense? Can these, you know, can this team scale this business and be profitable someday? Do the terms of the deal look good? You know, understanding whether or not you're actually getting a good deal, right? Because it could be an amazing company, but if they're valuing themselves at $100 million and they're only making $1 million right now, they may have already priced in a lot of the value they're going to create down the road. And so the upside is lower.
Yeah.
All of these types of things, it's really important to understand and know before you get into that deal. Because you could be investing what you think is an amazing company, but it turns out there's 15 competitors out there that are competing against them and are actually really well-funded and can maybe beat them at their own game. So essentially due diligence is just taking the time to understand from top to bottom everything that you can about that organization, from does the market look good to can these founders actually execute on the vision and everything in between. And I think, you know, you don't have to spend a million hours. You don't have to look at every line item and thing in the world about the company, but getting a good general sense of the organization and whether or not all the prospects of it look good is really, really important. And you can protect yourself from a lot of downside and try and de-risk your investing strategy by taking the time to get to know that company.
And when I do private deals, a lot of these platforms have figured out how to make it due diligence really easy. And then I'm also in an angel network and they do the due diligence for you. But the things that I really look at, and I would love to hear kind of, Chris, your personal experiences, but the things that I personally look at is market size and kind of the market climate. Where is the market going? Who's in the market? So you mentioned competitors. That's something I definitely look at. But really, what's their potential? And I think I'll say this. Most of the companies that I look at have a grossly inflated perspective of the market that they can achieve, which is good. I mean, they need to know the whole market. But I think that's something really important to understand. Really, what is the potential? Because you can only you can't make more money than the market is, at least not for a while. Now, obviously, companies like Uber and Lyft have pioneered a much, much larger market. You definitely have to look at the market size. And then you mentioned this one, too, and something I definitely look at is team. Are these people who are doing this as a part-time side hustle, are these people who are fully invested? Have they done startups before? Because I will tell you, having done startups in multiple stages from zero revenue to about $100 million in revenue, no matter where you are in the life cycle of a startup, it is grueling and it's hard work. And if you don't have a team that's been there before and has done it and has contacts and to raise more money when money runs thin, because it's not a matter of if, but when usually,
yep.
Do they have the stamina to make some of those hard decisions? Have they been through team changes and team growth and having to right size the team and things like that? So those are some of the things that I personally look at. And then am I aligned with it from a value perspective? Because I'm obviously not going to put my money into something where I don't agree with their philosophy or mission or things that they do with their money. For me, I look at companies that treat their team members well, take care of their team, because usually a team that's treated well and is gelled together will be able to make it through some of the ups and downs of the startup world. So those are some of the things I look at. But are there any things that, like, for you, is it the one thing that sticks out? Maybe not as someone in King's Crowd, but when you look independently, is there like one thing that you always look for?
Sure. So yeah, there, you know, we have 5 key criteria we look at, and I kind of hit on some of them before. And then within that, we have, you know, 15, 20 questions that we ask on each dimension. But I think the thing that stands out for me more than anything is that question of, is this 10x better than something that currently exists today? And you know, not to keep harping on a company like Uber, but, you know, when you think about it, right, the taxi system, I mean, unless you live in downtown New York or, you know, somewhere where there's a million taxis running by on a momentary basis, the ability to find a taxi, the ability to pay, the ability to have a good experience was all really, really bad, right? It was just this friction-filled experience that was awful. And here they come with this amazing solution that basically takes out all of those frictions and completely revolutionizes the way, you know, a simple process, but just completely revolutionizes the way that it's done. And I think another one, you know, you were talking about market opportunities, like, you know, are they interesting, right? And so you look at Swell water bottles. I mean, they got into an industry that was highly uninteresting and nothing was going on in the water bottle industry.
Right.
Probably wasn't really growing at all. And here they come with this really sleek, awesome design, something that was artistic and it was exciting and it just breathed new life into an industry that was completely flat. And they basically caused all of the growth in that market. Seeing people like that who just have visions that are beyond what currently exists today, I think is a really powerful thing. And those are the types of founders that I get really excited about backing, because it's like, holy cow, you see a problem, you're making it so, so much better than anything out there that currently exists today. So I think that's something that I always look for.
That's awesome. And speaking of the Swell water bottles, I've been getting more and more ads for new water bottles entering the market. I mean, that was something no one innovated in that space. You're right. Every day I see 10 new water bottles that someone's trying to sell me that can talk to you, or a smart water bottle or whatever else. So,
and now look, that so to that point, this is where, you know, the VCs are going to come in and be like, oh man, you know, let's get in on the water bottle craze, right? And partake. But is it 10x better? Because someone's already done it, right?
Right.
And I think that's where the consumer oftentimes can help dictate these things, because they're experiencing it. It's like, yeah, I bought a Swell water bottle the other day. Everyone at the gym is talking about how awesome it is. And they're right. Yeah. And that's a company that didn't really accept any funding, right? Female founder who's just done exceedingly well and perhaps would not have been noticed by the traditional venture market, which is just too closed off to recognize sometimes the innovations that are out there.
Yeah, that's so true. So true. Well, Chris, in our last couple minutes that we have here, I appreciate everything you've shared and so much wisdom and insight in this market that I think everyone should explore. I mean, there's so much opportunity. There's hundreds, maybe even thousands of startups and companies raising on crowd equity platforms. There's 46 platforms. We just touched on WeFunder, but there's 45 more. I highly, highly recommend people checking that market out, but they need to do it with training wheels at first, I would recommend. And so that's what King's Crowd does. Could you talk a little bit about exactly what King's Crowd does and how you can help guide someone's decision-making and just really encourage them and help them make sure they're making a wise investment?
Absolutely. So if you've ever invested in a public stock, perhaps you've read something like Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg or Morningstar, whatever it may be, wherever you go to learn about your equity research, we are the exact same thing, but for this new online private market. So our job is to provide you with vetted deal flow. We pull in all of the deals across all of the platforms that are raising, and then we actually go through a traditional private equity venture capital due diligence process and look at things like market size and founder experience, et cetera. And we provide you with the tools and resources you need to make quick, informed investment decisions in this space. So instead of looking at 45 platforms and hundreds of deals at any one time, you could just come to us and you could find the exact things that you should be looking at. Either you just look at the best deals, or perhaps you have certain criteria you want to look at, like, you know, dentistry companies, whatever it may be, we can help you find it quickly and then help you do the due diligence on it in a really informed way. We basically do that on a subscription fee. That way, we're not, you know, unbiased and being paid by startups or founders or platforms or anything like that. So everything we say is truly what we think. So you could come to kingscrowd.com and subscribe, and it's, you know, 10 or 20 bucks a month. And you could feel free to reach out to me at chris@kingscrowd.com. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions at all that you might have about our service and how we can help you invest in this new private market.
That's awesome, Chris. Well, I appreciate that. And I know on the King's Crowd website, you also have a link where people can schedule time on your calendar. I mean, there's just a lot of ways to get knowledge. And I would say investing in investing, meaning investing in a platform like this that can help guide you, especially at first, is definitely worth the money, so you can learn and understand some of the things that you should look for, especially if you're one of those people who has put a lot of money in mutual funds over the years. Nothing wrong with a mutual fund, but if you can have one of those Menlo Venture exits with a 93X, that's pretty sweet. So there's a lot of cool opportunities out there. So many neat companies you can get behind and discover new things that, and you can be on the forefront and the first to know. So Chris, I appreciate you sharing all your wisdom and all your time today. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And I will link to King's Crowd in the show notes, as well as Boone's WeFunder in the show notes. You can click the link for either one of those. But I want to thank you all for listening to another episode of the Dental Experience Podcast. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Dental Experience Podcast. For show notes, to ask a question, or for more information, visit www.thedentalpodcast.com. The ideas discussed during this episode are the opinions of the participants and do not serve as legal, financial, or clinical advice. Until next time, this is the Dental Experience Podcast.